With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I think there's no doubt that if you can see the humorous side of things, you can get through life rather easier than if you just doomy about everything. Because essentially, I think that life is absurd. Was it Albert Camus said, the realization that life is absurd should not be an end, but a beginning.
Welcome to the Humorology Podcast with me, Paul Barros, and my glittering lineup of guests from the worlds of business, sport and entertainment, who are going to share their wisdom and their use of humour with you. Humorology is the study of how humour can dramatically improve your business and your life. Humorology puts the fun into business fundamentals, increases the value of your laughing stock, and puts a punchline back into your bottom line. Please remember to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. My guest on this edition of the Humorology Podcast is the self-proclaimed Mayor of Balham. In addition to his possibly made-up political prowess, he has built a cracking career as a comic writer and presenter, both on stage and screen. His alternative stand-up roots and routines have been rightly lauded as legendary, having stormed clubs and theatres all over the world, from the Edinburgh Fringe to the Hackney Empire. His stage play, An Evening with Gary Lineker, written with Chris England, was nominated for an Olivier Award and was adapted for television. He himself has also well adapted for television, making memorable appearances in Red Dwarf, Have I Got News for You, and Grumpy Old Men, just to name a few. When he isn't leaving physical audiences in stitches, you can hear him on the airways in shows like Radio 4's Loose Ends, Excess Baggage, The Smith Lectures, and Arthur Smith's Last Hangover. It's not often that our show is blessed with such mayoral majesty. Arthur Smith, welcome to the Humorology Podcast.
I am the Mayor of Balham. Oh, yes, I bloody am. I am the Mayor of Balham. I bloody am. That's my lovely song that I wrote for myself. I wrote the libretto for that.
Well, that's beautiful.
You're not sounding that convinced.
But you and I go way back, so I was hoping that I could be more convincing than that. And talking of way back, the Jesuits, which I know you're keen on, say, give me a child of seven and I will give you the man. Was the young Arthur Smith humorous, funny?
Without being immodest, I would say yes, I was. I learned early on that humour was sort of my thing and it could make me popular. And because I remember particularly when I was about seven, I think, at primary school, and our teacher announced we were going to do a version of Peter Pan. And I was really excited by this. And I went home and wrote my own version of Peter Pan, which was obviously unperformable. But she said, well, all right, look, you can, we won't use your script, but you can play any part you want. So I went for Captain Hook, obviously. And then I was determined to frighten everybody in the audience, you know, the parents and the kids. So I came on with my coat hanger hand that my mother had fashioned for me, shouting and being really scary, or I thought I was, and everybody started laughing. And the scarier I tried to be, the more they laughed. At which point, I think it was about then, I kind of realised, oh, yeah, maybe actually this is quite good. People laughing is quite good. I like this. And there on in, I was always trying to make and making jokes. And I was sometimes quite rude about my friends, looking back on it. I was almost a bit of a bully, although the person I bullied most is now one of my closest old friends, so perhaps that doesn't count. But yes, I learned that making people laugh was a way of making yourself likable. I think, who is it? Victor Borger said, laughter is the shortest distance between two people. And I think that's true, because if you meet someone, you don't speak their language, but you sort of make a funny noise and do that or fart or something, and they laugh, then you have a connection, even though you don't know what they're saying and they don't know what you're saying.
That, I think that's 100% true. And I used to love Victor Borge. For those of our listeners who don't know, they go look him up on YouTube. Yeah. Hilarious deadpan with the piano.
Absolutely brilliant.
Beautiful.
He was Danish, wasn't he?
He was Danish, yeah. And by the way, he was a big hit in America as well, which was always surprising to me that he stormed it over there as well. I was recently listening again, because it's one of my favourite bits of radio ever, of your Radio 4 Extra show about your dad, Sid. And I have to say, and this is absolutely true, I was talking to somebody who works on the podcast, Emma, and she said it had me in tears, and it was the most beautiful, poignant, moving, warm and funny bits of radio she'd ever heard. And I completely agree. Your dad sounds like an amazing character. And you've just said you at seven, you knew, realised you're funny. But he was funny, wasn't it? So was there some kind of genetic mix in there?
Well, I don't know if these things are genetic, but certainly he valued humour. And he had loads of funny stories, particularly about being a policeman on the beat that he used to tell. And he loved lots of old jokes. I learned a lot of old jokes from him, which I rejected in my early years. But these days, I've come round to loving them again. Yes, my father, he was a copper, and he used to joke, though, with the people he had to arrest, even though he didn't really want to arrest anyone, because he'd been in the war and he'd been a prisoner of war for two and a half years. He ended the war in Colditz Castle, the castle, the place that became famous as a board game subsequently. He definitely prized humour, and he was very proud of me when I started making it in the world of comedy, and he used to come to shows and be very encouraging. So, yes, I think there's no doubt that some families prize humour more than others, and I think those that do probably will have a happier time of things.
Well, I think that's true. I think, and if it is valued and prized, and children are praised for doing it rather than given a cuff round the head for it, it probably will do it. One of my favourite bits of the show, Sid, is when you tell his Gina Lollobrigida story.
Oh, yeah.
which I just would, if you don't mind, I'd love you to share for our audience.
I will happily do so. So a man is washed up on a desert island with Italian film star and great-looking woman, Gina Lollobrigida. And it's just the two of them, and they find food and water and shelter, and eventually they end up sleeping together. And one day the man says, "Gina, would you mind if I drew a moustache on you and called you Frank?" And she said, "Oh, okay." So he drew a moustache and he said, "Oi, Frank, you'll never guess who I'm shagging."
Still one. It's such a great gag. It's just, it's the perfect gag and perfectly told. It was absolutely.
Well, I've got plenty more of me dad's old jokes if you want to fill out the time.
Well, please feel free at any time that one presents itself to you. And we could just do Arthur Smith's Dad's Old Jokes Humorology Edition.
Yeah, we could do a separate podcast.
Yeah. Actually, it's not a terrible idea, is it? You've probably got hundreds, to be honest with you. So what makes you laugh, Arthur?
ears. Aren't they ridiculous? Slapped on the side of your head, sort of funny, flatty, fleshy things. They're ridiculous ears. I mean, most people, you could say you could recognise your partner from her mouth or her nose or her eyes, but not from ears. They all sort of look the same and they're stupid. And actually, I'm annoyed by ears. I've changed my mind. Ears, what the hell's going on with you? That's why I put these on to cover mine up. No, everything potentially makes me laugh. Not everything, but I mean, I think there's no doubt that if you can see the humorous side of things, you can get through life rather easier than if you just doomy about everything. Because essentially, I think that life is absurd. Was it Albert Camus said, the realisation that life is absurd should not be an end, but a beginning. And being alive is a ridiculous thing. And one of the great consolations of the sadness of life is laughter. And I always think it connects us in some ways. Because if you think about it, it's such a funny sound, isn't it? I always think it's the closest we come to sound. You know, we sound like chimpanzees when we laugh, who are, of course, our great ancestors. Although I'm not sure if animals have a sense of humour, but humour is one of the things that makes us human. And therefore, I mean, you look at someone, though, like Donald Trump, and patently, he was like a failed stand-up to me. And I think if he'd been, managed to be successful as a stand-up, we wouldn't have had all this trouble. But he's someone with no sense of humour, really. Like Mrs. Thatcher, I kind of think, the people I dislike politically are those probably with no sense of humour.
But so that's the barrier to entry for you is actually the
well, I guess I mean I could get on with people without much of a sense of humour, but yeah, I could. I don't. I think one of the things that ties you with your friends is a shared sense of humour. No doubt. And if someone hasn't got a sense of humour, I don't really know what to say to them. Although I think everyone has to one degree or another.
Well, that's interesting that you think everyone has. But I mean, we obviously worked together for many years in places like Jongleurs and the Comedy Store and all and Edinburgh and places. How we've all seen people fail to be funny because all the open spots. Why do you think people fail to be funny?
Well, probably everyone fails to be funny when they first go on stage. I can think of plenty of examples. I mean, Eddie Izzard, for example, for quite a long time, everyone said, oh no, Eddie Izzard's gone. But then almost overnight, he found his voice. I heard a story about Jack D that I don't know if it's true, but I think it was a similar one with Les Dawson at because Jack used to do stand-up, and he was doing all right, but, you know, not that well. And then he decided to give it up, but he still had a few gigs left. But going along with that sort of, oh, I'm sick of doing this attitude, suddenly that was the voice that was his, and he started getting much bigger laughs. I think it's a question of, well, there's probably people who are hopeless stand-ups when they start, but become quite good. And it's just a question of finding your own unique voice. And that takes a time in entertainment.
Well, I remember Jack because we were all playing the Comedy Store and he was doing open spots and he was basically Happy Jack for quite a while. And then you're quite right, that finding that voice. And I think that's one of the things Kim Kinney, who used to run the Comedy Store, always used to say, you know, you don't know who you are or what's your voice, what's your attitude. How long did it take you to find your voice?
Well, not that long in stand-up, in a way, because I'd already spent, I'd already done 5 or 6 years in a review company. Where it was sketches but more often than not, I would begin to start doing monologues by myself. So the first time I did the Comedy Store, I died on my ass. But then 6 months later, it had actually closed down by then briefly. And I started getting offered to do MCing around little clubs in London and pubs. And I found myself through that, through and talking to the audience and only doing little bits between acts. Somehow that shot me forward, and so it was a way I found my voice eventually, and it wasn't too long a journey because I'd been in a band as well. I was the lead singer of a band, and I used to do funny introductions to the songs, and inevitably the introductions got longer than the songs. So the key is stage time. That, you know, the more time you're on stage, the better you will eventually become. And so if you're still dying on your ass after 2 years, give up.
Oh, really? But I think I've heard you say that if you've never died on your ass, you're not a comedian.
Yeah. I think every comedian must have done that, had a terrible gig where you just, and then you had to walk past everyone on the way out and they're all looking at you thinking, bloody hell, who are you? But that's part of the pleasure when you do well, because you think, oh yeah, that's good.
But the worst thing is that when you have to walk back into the dressing room and all the heads go down, when you just
never
know.
Never mind, mate, yeah.
But you had, I think, and one of the hardest jobs, and you were, I'd say, between 5 and 7 people could compare well. And Ardan, you were right up there as being brilliant, because you had the hardest job. When somebody died, you had to pick the audience up. Well, what's your tips for actually doing that?
Well, one thing is, in a sense, you have to register that with the audience. You both know that person. So it's no good coming on and saying, hey, weren't they great? Brilliant. Give them another round of applause, because they're not going to buy that. I used to have a line that I'd stolen from an Anthony Powell novel. I used to come on and say, well, I think we can say, the least we can say about him, he's a reflection of the endless... Oh, damn, no, I forgot the fucking line now. Now I'm dying on my arse. Oh, yeah, he's a reflection of the infinite variety of the human personality. And people used to sort of laugh at that. I sort of put the person down without being too unpleasant. I mean, you could come on. I mean, as we remember, Malcolm Hardy would probably have just come on and said, well, he was shit, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, God. We were talking to Joe Brand about the whole Malcolm Hardy thing and the Tunnel Palladium. Yeah. And we all, did you have any experiences at the Tunnel Palladium that you remember?
Well, quite a few. I played the opening night at the Tunnel Palladium, which was, for those who didn't listen to Joe, was a kind of pub stuck in the wasteland by gasworks by the Blackwall Tunnel. And it was emceed by the legendary Malcolm, who spent 5 years in prison, and he just didn't give a shit about anything in a way. Well, I remember I was on second, and the act on before me were friends of mine, and someone had thrown a bottle on stage and hit my friend. And I came on and did 2 gags that were really like my best gags, and then said, but if you think I'm doing any more, if you chuck glasses at people, fuck you. And I walked off rather self-importantly. And but as you remember, often the heckling was so brutal there that the shows quite often only ever lasted 20 minutes anyway, because everyone had been booed off immediately. Well, did you have a bad one? Did you have any there, Paul?
Oh, yeah. Well, both Morris Minor and the Majors and the Calypso Twins played it. And actually, generally, did pretty well, because actually they would, you didn't know whether they were going to like you or not like you, but we stopped playing it when we went on to racist heckling when me and Ainsley were going one day, and we thought, no, it's gone too far. And I remember Ains going up to Malcolm, and as you know, because you know Ainsley very well as well, Ainsley was really angry, and he got Malcolm up by the wall. And it went, we'll be having all the money, Malcolm. And Malcolm was like shocked and went, yeah, of course. Because it was horrible. But they had like this group think. It was like they all got together and discussed.
Well, some of them did, as I understand. And they used to practice heckles. Because there was one time, there was one guy who used to heckle in Latin. But the others seem to understand. Nun sum quarat, or which is quite a novelty.
Yeah, it was. Talking about heckling, should a good comedian or anybody, I mean, not everybody on our podcast will be comedians, obviously, are people who have to make speeches at weddings or business on everything. Should they welcome heckles? Because I think you and I agree that everybody should welcome heckles because it can actually make the thing go better.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because you're engaging with the audience. I mean, I'm not sure how good it is if someone's doing racist heckling, then I think they've just got to be thrown out or something. But, another thing about that is that people know that this is genuinely spontaneous. This is not something you've written down, although there are anti-heckle lines, obviously. But actually, I heard that, sometimes the heckles can be just too brutal. I was doing a gig a while back with this guy. I won't say it was, but he was even older than me, and he wasn't doing terribly well. And suddenly a woman's voice rang out from the audience saying, "Excuse me, I think you really need to think about the way your life is going." Which is not just your acting shit, so is the whole point of your existence.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean some heckles you just have to accept it and walk off, I think.
Oh, was it the old Glasgow Apollo one where it was Mike and Bernie Winters? And Mike and Bernie Winters were on, and Mike Winters used to come on and do a little bit of hello, how are you, and everything. And then Bernie would put his head around the curtain, and Mike was dying on his ass, and the Glasgow Apollo audiences were like just silent. And when Bernie put his head around the audience, somebody in the audience just goes, "Oh, fuck, there's two of them."
Yeah, I've heard that story. Now, I think I heard that story about Morgan and Wise. Also, the Glasgow Empire, that's for certain.
That's one of those apocryphal stories, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it probably did happen to someone somewhere, or I don't know.
So what was your favourite heckle and heckle put-down as well? I mean...
Well, I used to have a couple of put-downs. I used to say, if someone was there, I said, "Nice to see the Bishop of Durham enjoying himself." I used to say something. And then I'd say, "I remember you. I shit you yesterday," or something, if it was getting a bit... And then I remember another incident when I was in Edinburgh, and I was in the audience at Leighton Live, which remember.
Yeah, I would do well.
It sort of started midnight, and nearly, everyone was drunk. But I was in the audience, and there was the actor who was on. I found him slightly objectionable. You know, he said to someone, "Does your mouth bleed once a month or something?" And I remember thinking, "Oh, that's not very good." Anyway, and then I started heckling him. I can't remember what I said, but I was getting quite a big laugh. And he said, "Oh, yeah." I mean, he didn't know who I was. He couldn't see or anything in the audience. He said, "Oh, yeah, you think this is funny? You think this is easy, do you, doing this stand-up? Well, why don't you try coming up and having a go?" So I said, "All right."
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
About 20 minutes. I remember another incident where it's at Jongleurs, and there were this bunch of blokes who were obviously pissed, and they were out together and they had been heckling all night. And then right at the end of the evening, I said, "You have been a right pain in the ass. I think the least you could do is come up here and give us a song. So what about Lion Sleeps Tonight?" And I wasn't really expecting this to happen. So do you remember A Whim A Wink? And I said, "Come on, I'll start you off. A Whim A Wink." And then they all started doing it. And then they did all come up on stage. And then one of them stepped forward for the opening line, "In the jungle." So he could, and this guy, he had the most beautiful voice. And they did this sensational version of it. And it turned out they were actually a choir who were out on the piss. And it just, at the end, it was just the most astonishing end to an evening as they sang Lion Sleeps Tonight. A bunch of sort of unruly drunks suddenly turned into this glorious choir.
One of the things I always talk to people about, especially in business, is about listening.
Yes, that's crucial.
Really, yeah. But you know, you spent your life on stage doing it. But what you're doing is you're really listening. And if you get a quiet heckle, or somebody says something funny, actually, you've got a microphone. You repeat it, and then you get the laugh.
Yeah, you steal the laugh of them, and. And also, you should be able to control the situation because you're A, you've got a microphone, B, the lights are on you, C, you're probably slightly less drunk than they are. So you should be able to ride with the moment. And sometimes, I mean, there are comedians who just improvise all the way through and just talk to the crowd, which is, you know, a brave and often wonderful thing to do. You know, a bit like Dylan Moran and, yeah.
Well, it's a high wire act at that point, isn't it, really?
Yes.
And people love that. I mean, and comedy is so great when it's on that sort of, it could well, go
either
way.
Well, that's why Impro, you know, has been, you know, is really so popular. And the Comedy Store players are still going into their 60s now.
Well, exactly. And you and I have both guested with them over the years, haven't
we? That's right, yes.
But did you find that, because I loved it, and I think you were at the same time when Mike Myers was doing it with us and taught us all the games in the afternoons and things like that. And I loved it, but it was the one thing that scared me more than anything else in comedy. You know, if I could... be on stage or have a guitar or know where I was going, it was like a safety net. And I think the Comedy Store players call it comedy without a safety net.
Yeah.
Did it frighten you?
Of course, as you say, there are techniques. And I mean, I didn't realise that when I was speaking early on. I mean, if someone says something to you, you have to essentially agree with it and expand upon it. Don't ever say no. That's the key to improv. You just got to go with the flow.
Yeah, yes, and is the thing.
That's right. Yes,
and you build on that. So you've always looked, because a lot of our listeners, you know, their number one fear is public speaking.
Mm.
So you've always looked unbelievably comfortable on stage. Is there anything you can share that might help people to feel more comfortable?
Listen, like you say, try and be comfortable in yourself. Have a couple of things up your sleeve if need be, but respond to the nowness of the moment, I think. I understand for most people, public speaking is absolutely terrifying because everyone's looking at you. But if you just can try and be yourself as natural as you can to listen to people, even if you're nervous, which you probably will be, just try and forget that and just focus on the moment that you're up there doing that.
Yeah, I agree, because the first chapter in my first book was the Pitching Bible was called It's All About Them. And I think people who do this really well, like yourself, who are think you are actually invested in the audience, not in your own head, if you know what I mean. It's you allow the unconscious mind to do it. Like when we're having a chat here or if we meet for a coffee or something, we don't come with notes, do we? And go, no. You know.
Well, in a way, that's what comedy is, and improvisation is just, you know, you're not reading notes when you're talking to someone. You're right, it's a conversation, and you're quite happy doing it. If you can get that degree of self-confidence when you're on a stage, that's the key to it.
So is it essentially a trust exercise, whereby you are trusting that something will come? Because usually what stops people is, oh, fuck, I don't know what to say. And we've all had that moment, at which point you have to put your attention somewhere else. Do you think people generally in normal workplaces laugh enough? Is humour actually enough, or is it being sort of like taken out of workplaces and this is, you know, this is now serious? And did people laugh more?
Well, I speak as someone who's never really been in workplaces that much, so I can't really comment. I mean, I've never sort of been in an office and surrounded by other people in the office, but I imagine that must be one of the things that would be good for an office to sort of binds everybody together. If you've got like some communal jokes and you know, if something terrible happens, well, we'll have a bit of a laugh of it instead. I don't know. What's your experience of that, Paul?
I think there's a lot of hierarchy that stops humour. Mm. And so therefore, when you get a hierarchy, people don't want to, you know, play and tease and, you know, that's chide. I think the word I'd like to bring back, which nobody uses anymore, I think is gentle chiding.
Yes.
Yeah. When I think that's where the life and the comes back into a workplace is when people can chide and play and do that. But if you've got a boss who's very much on the hierarchical system and, you know, that like the old Frost Show sketch of, you know, I look down on him.
Yes.
You know, with
I did some corporate Zoom a while back where, and I have this joke where I pick out a name. I mean, I've usually got the name before, or sometimes I just make it up. So, is there anybody here tonight called Paul? Yeah, we won't say you, Paul. Is there anyone here tonight called Danny Paulie? And they say, yeah. So, Danny, some of your friends have come up to me tonight. They've asked me to say they think you're a bit of a wanker, mate. And I did this when I did it with the boss as the wanker. And I'm not entirely sure, but I've noticed I haven't had another booking from them since. Well, I'm sure he would have got away with it if it was someone lower down the hierarchy, probably.
Yeah, but isn't that indicative of a corporate culture, though? Because I've talked to a few people who, when they've done corporates, and actually I don't think it was Joe Brand who was saying it's indicative, though if the boss can take a joke, it's generally a good sign that it filters down into other people. And have you found that? You've done hundreds of corporates over the years, haven't you?
Well, I don't really do them so much anymore. I think I'm a bit too wild for most corporate gigs. So if anyone wants to book me for a corporate gig, here I am.
Well, you won't go far.
Because I've said some of those have not gone well. I remember I did one, what was it for? I did one where it was a bunch of car salesmen, and I did a whole load of routines about how I hate cars, which, looking back on it, was probably not a very good idea.
If I asked you to write a business case for why humour should be more for everybody in business, this could be in, you know, offices, it could be in factories, it could be anything. Why do you think it's actually useful as a tool? And, you know,
Well, I don't really know about business, but there's no doubt that humour is something that will always bring people together. And obviously, I imagine, you know, in a workplace, if everyone is enjoying each other's company, then they're going to be much more productive, I imagine. So, yes, I would cultivate you, although don't, you know, some people are quite shy and you have to be gentle with them. But even the shy, you know, shy people are often the funniest when you give them a chance. So it's just a question of creating an atmosphere where people feel comfortable making a little joke, and that in turn will bring them together. That's what I'd say.
So it's a culture, basically create a culture. But do you think, I mean, things like creativity are more enhanced by humour? Because it goes back to what we were talking about, the Comedy Store Players, and the having a set of rules, if you like, that allow you to play, to be creative. And if you are going, somebody says, you know, I hope we can land this plane properly, and you go, we're not in a plane. It shuts everything down.
Yeah, but if you are in a plane and you've got to land it properly, then that would probably be slight. Well, I don't know, even then it might be. Yeah, maybe that would be funny even if you were in a plane.
Oh, yeah. But allowing the culture and the atmosphere to go. It's, I think one of the things that you have perfected, well, you had it from the start, but is an attitude of warmth.
And yes.
Because even when you're taking the piss, it's done with love, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, that's one of the things about stand-up is status. You know, some people deliberately play low status, which is, oh, I don't really know what's going on. And then other people play high status. I suppose I'm more like that, where you're sort of telling people about the world. But the key is then, though, is to listen to everyone else and to recognise that you don't really know what the fuck you're talking about necessarily, because in the end, none of us do.
No, well, that's true. But then is that the ability to laugh at yourself?
Yes, have to be able to do that. I think if you don't do that, then you might come over as arrogant. And the key is to recognise your own weaknesses, even if you're trying to tell people about the world. I mean, I'm a bit of a Plato man who said, the only thing I know is that I know nothing. And yes, I can punch my opinions out there, but I don't really know, because just we're such a tiny little specks in the immensity of universes that what the hell do we know, really? Nothing. So let's have a laugh and enjoy ourselves while we're here.
I have wise words. Why are we drawn to people who make us laugh so much? What is that compulsion?
Well, I suppose it shows an understanding of the absurdity of life. And that always brings people together. Well, having said that, I mean, I like Donald Trump again. He does not at all funny. And yet people worship him, although perhaps they don't think he's being funny. I mean, he tries to be funny, but it's always just so awful. So I'm not sure if he isn't a denial of that point of yours, but humour is what brings us together in the end, from wherever you are in the world. Every country, every human has some element of humour. And even if you don't know, you know, even if you look different, your skin colour's different, you speak a different language, you've never been in the same place together, but humour can still bring you together. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, no, I think it's very important that people understand that you are going to make yourself more employable, more attractive, more thing by finding the funny.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things I learned early on, that's one of the reasons I went into stand-up, because, you know, I was more attractive to women if I'd been entertaining them on stage in front of a large crowd than if I was just sort of sidling up to them from shifty obscurity, which had sort of been my early technique. Yeah, right. Laughter is good for making people like you. And if they're funny too, then you like them.
Yeah, and I think, is it also intoxicating?
Yeah, of course. And it's catching, isn't it? I mean, there's nothing funnier, is there, than when someone corpses on the radio or television and the other people start laughing along with them. I mean, it's infectious, isn't it, laughter? So in a way that, say, belching isn't. Yawning might be, actually. If everybody starts, you know, if everyone in the room starts yawning, you probably would too, maybe. I don't know about that. But laughter is the thing. I mean, you know, it's an involuntary thing, laughter, like belching or farting or... But we don't pay to go into rooms to get people to make us belch or fart, do we? But we do pay to make them for them to make us laugh.
Yeah, and does that become like a drug? Because I think it does. You see, I think once you've had that high, I think you really are addicted to it in a certain way.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things. A lot of comedians found it very hard during the pandemic. Is you just miss people laughing with you or at you, or you know, you miss the exciting moment on stage. I remember one very funny moment. One time when I laughed a great deal was when I was doing a version of Hamlet in Edinburgh years ago in the mid 90s. And it was kind of a comic version, but not entirely. But I'd done two tryouts before I got to Edinburgh, which had both been a fucking disaster. And so then I went on stage with my first show at the Pleasance in Edinburgh, and there were like critics in the audience and various people I knew, and I was terrified. But it actually went really well at the end. And then I took me applause, went out the back, and I slipped over and fell on a banana skin onto my ass into a puddle. And I don't know if anyone ever had actually fallen on a banana skin before, but I thought, well, this is hilarious. And I just laughed and laughed and laughed as I lay there with the banana skin stuck to my ass.
It's a lovely image. We've now come to the part of the show that we like to call quick fire questions, Arthur.
Oh, yes. OK.
Quick fire questions.
Who's the funniest business person, i.e. non-comedian, that you've met?
That I've met? Barack Obama.
Oh, really? When did you meet Barack Obama? This is a story I want to hear.
In my imagination.
Oh, I see.
He was really funny. That was one of the things about Obama. He's so good. He even danced well, couldn't he? I'll give you another one. The funniest person I've ever met is probably my partner, Beth, who just endlessly makes me laugh when I'm not in the doghouse, obviously.
No, Beth is very, very funny. What book makes you laugh?
Diary of a Nobody by George Grossmith.
What film makes you laugh?
Quite a few. Oh, what's the famous one about the band? Oh, geez, I've forgotten the name. You know,
Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap.
Yeah, this is Spinal. I'm sure I'm not the first to have said that. I thought that was one of the funniest things I'd ever seen.
It is still genius. And I'm friends with Mark Bedford from Madness, and we will go out for long lunches where there will just be every line from Spinal Tap.
Oh, I want to go and watch it again in a minute.
Oh, yeah, no, it is brilliant and worth catching again. Taking a shift to the other side and going to a different direction, what is not funny?
Death is, well, unless it's someone you really hate, but no, I shouldn't say that. Death isn't very funny.
But death can be funny because you just did a gag about it.
That's true. I suppose it can be funny if it's, but not if it's your own... someone who's close to you, or maybe your own death might be funny. Maybe that's the last thing that happens, just as you drift off and your consciousness goes, you're in a great big hall of laughter. That would be a nice thought.
That's good. Yeah, no, I like that. What word makes you laugh?
Kipper.
Kipper?
Yeah.
Oh,
Kipper. It's got a K, double P, and it's a funny fish. And I laugh when I hear the word kipper.
It's funny. What sound makes you laugh?
Well, a fart, obviously. I mean, that's one of the great pleasures of life. I mean, some people never really get beyond it. I mean, when you're about eight, farting, obviously, is the funniest thing ever. But it never really stops being funny. I mean, if if some, you know, world leader does a fart unexpectedly during something, it is just everyone will find it funny. I don't know why, but farting is funny.
Trumping would probably be...
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll go viral.
Yeah, let's all go viral, man.
Would you rather be considered clever or funny?
Probably funny, especially since I'm meant to be a comedian, not an academic. But it'd be nice to be both, but yeah, probably funny.
But don't you think that in order to be funny, you kind of have to, you've known most comedians that have come from Britain in the last 40 years, aren't most of them quite clever as well?
Well, it depends what you mean by clever, but yes, I suppose they're quite adept at thinking, and because you have to be, there's a degree of cleverness that's involved in writing funny material, yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yes, no doubt. So, yeah, all right, then I'd like to be funny and clever.
Okay, you've got it. And finally, and I'm hoping this will be one of Sid's gags, but desert island gags. You can only take one joke with you to a desert island, Arthur. What is it?
All right, let's go with this one. So, well, should I do that one? No, I'll do this one. Two balloons get married and have a little baby balloon, and they all sleep together in bed, and it's lovely. But eventually, baby balloon gets a bit too big, and his mum says, sorry, you'll have to sleep next door now. So he goes in next door, and he's lying there one night, and he misses being in with mum and dad. So while they're asleep, he sneaks back in between them. But he lets a bit of air out of his mum, and then out of his dad, and out of himself, and then they're all lovely. But he wakes up in the morning to find his mother is furious. Look what you've done, she says. You've let me down. You've let your father down, and then everyone can fill in the last punchline, which I always think is a nice thing. Worst of all, you've let yourself down. Yay.
Yeah, brilliant. as ever, brilliant, funny, and so joyous to be with.
Lovely Arthur to speak Smith. To you, Paul.
Arthur Smith, thank you so much for being on the Humorology Podcast.
Cheers, Paul.
The Humorology Podcast was hosted by Paul Barros and produced by Simon Banks. Music by Steve Hayworth, creative direction by Les Hughes, and additional research by Helen Sykes. Please remember to subscribe, like, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a Big Sky production.